Hey, it's Tim here, and I have an extra special announcement to start the show today. I want to let you, my loyal podcast listeners, be some of the first people to know that I'm running my very first live piano teaching conference here in Melbourne in January 2020. This two-day event called Piano Pivot Live will be unlike any live piano teaching event or workshop you've experienced before. Not only will you be able to engage with your favorite speakers, bloggers, podcasters, and authors, you'll also get to participate in practical, hands-on workshops, masterminds, and roundtable implementation sessions that guarantee you'll not just be inspired, but you'll have a plan of action to take back to your studio to make real change in your teaching and your business. There'll be panel discussions, fireside chats, full exhibit hall, networking events, amazing food and accommodation, and it's all going to be held over 2 days in our beautiful Melbourne summer. If you've ever thought about visiting Melbourne or Australia, then this is your ultimate opportunity. It will be the perfect start to a new year of teaching, getting to hang out with hundreds of other teachers from around the world, getting inspired, planning your studio, and making real change for the year ahead. We've already pre-sold 30 tickets to our members in just 10 days, and the main launch of early bird tickets will be going on sale very, very soon. There are only going to be about 150 seats available at this conference, so stay tuned to the podcast for further updates as we near our official launch. And remember to block out January 23rd and 24th to be here with me in Melbourne. I can't wait to see you. This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Welcome back to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast for Season 2 of 2019. This is your weekly dose of creative inspiration, fun conversation, and teaching tactics for your studio. And we look forward to help keeping you motivated and inspired as you teach and run your business, and to give you the confidence you need to explore new ideas, teach more creatively, and to grow the studio of your dreams. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and you're listening to episode number 163. And a special shout out, of course, to my Inner Circle Piano Teaching community members. Today's episode is a bit of an odd one because we're reversing the microphones. One of my regular listeners and will be known to a number of you from online, he's got a blog and he's a composer, great guy. His name's Christopher Oyle, and he's going to be interviewing me on this podcast. And he actually reached out to me and said, Tim, I love your show, and I've got so many questions about things that I would love to ask you. And so that's what we're doing today. I literally am going to hand over to him in a minute, and he's going to interview me in a reverse episode. Let me tell you about Chris first. He aims to lead piano pedagogy and performance into the 22nd century, perfecting what is and experimenting with what could be. He helps students discover and master unique niches, arranges music and MIDI recordings for the Faber Piano Adventures, composes music for FJH Music Company, co-runs the ASMTA James R. Anthony Honors Recital. He runs a blog at Oyle Music, OILLmusic.com, performs eclectic recitals, and presents at music education conferences. Chris holds an MM in Piano Performance Pedagogy from Arizona State University and a BM in Piano Performance and Music Education from the Crane School of Music at SUNY Potsdam. Well, welcome to the show, Chris Oyle.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
This is a little bit of a weird one. I actually don't really know what's going to happen because I'm actually going to hand over to you pretty much about now, as I mentioned in the introduction, because you're going to interview me. Do you want to tell us why you wanted to do this and how you pitched this to me?
Yeah, even though this is really an interview about you, right? So,
last question for you, okay, then you can hand over.
Right, the last question for me, yeah. That's great. Well, I was listening to a lot of your podcasts and you asked on Facebook whether somebody would like to be on your show. And I thought, you know, that would be a really cool opportunity for me. And so I like to think of really cool, weird ideas like this one. And I was listening to your show and you talk about other people so much. You have so many guests on the show. And it seems like a rare thing that we ever get to hear a lot about your own thoughts and what you're all about. So I just wanted to hear more from you. And I had a lot of questions that I personally want to ask you. So this is a great opportunity to do so.
Fantastic. I'm up for it. Let's do it.
So the first thing I think I'd like to ask, just to give your listeners a little bit more of a general idea of what you're all about. You think in your own words, you could describe what you do for a living and describe, I know you wear multiple hats, so maybe you could just give a brief little image of all of those hats.
Yeah, well, the words I use when people who aren't in the music industry ask me what I do is I say, I teach piano teachers how to teach better. That's the simplest way I can explain what I do to people who aren't piano teachers or in music education. And it's amazing how many people then come out with their stories as adults of their piano lesson experience as a child and how they wish they had a better teacher, or this didn't work, or that went so badly and they quit and they regret it. Or, you know, it would happen in one out of every two people who I might tell about what I do. So that's the simple sort of answer as to what I feel that I'm doing and what my passion is. And my passion really is around helping stop children from quitting music studies and experiences due to teaching that's a little bit outdated. That's what I really want to try and help, because there's so much of that aspect of the instrumental music teaching world that goes on today. I'm sure not in your studio, of course, Chris, that is so stuck in the 1800s. And that's, you know, that, and there's that now an ever increasing disconnect. Yeah, that's right. There's that ever-increasing disconnect now between kids of today, technology, and what life is like with the ways that we were teaching. So that's just a quick overview of that. Really, the hats I wear, I mean, really, I feel I wear the hat of the owner of my business, which encompasses what you guys see, the blog, the podcast, the membership site. I also have a hat as a piano teacher myself, you know, in my own studio behind me here. And I've got the hat as my personal life, and more recently have become a dad as a foster carer. So that's a big hat that I've put on recently. And that's, yeah, that is really exciting. It's been an amazing experience.
So I'm interested how you got to this. Why are you even wearing these hats? What's the point? Why, like you said, that you want to help teachers and you want to help students from quitting. Did you have a sort of a personal experience that led you to wanting to do that?
Thankfully, my own experience at the piano was very good. I was really lucky. My teacher was a superstar. I've actually got a picture of her on my wall right now. I'm looking at. She was amazing with me and let me play what I wanted to play and let me go off and do jazz studies when she really wanted to teach me classical, all this kind of stuff. So I personally had a very good experience, but I think in answer to your question, two things stuck out for me. One was the number of children I heard of who were just quitting for no real other reason than this disconnect with their teaching and the style. And also just seeing other teachers, particularly when I was at schools in particular, just the way they were going about things, and you can see children just not inspired or engaged because, you know, perhaps they've just gone to reading way too early. You know, the first lesson in the method book comes out and here's middle C and all that kind of stuff. And you can just see their faces drained of energy. So, you know, I've kind of witnessed that in schools and in speaking to other people who have children or to children themselves who have come to me. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could do something about this, because it doesn't have to be like this.
No, it's of course, it should be such a positive experience, like the same one that you had.
Right.
Well, great. So you talked about some of the hats that you wear. You gave a little bit of more of an idea of that. And I'm just thinking that there's, you know, quite a few people who do similar things to what you're doing. There's a lot of, well, at least now there is a lot of podcasts out there. There's so many teachers, there's so many blogs, et cetera, et cetera. How does your own teaching, your podcast, your blog, and your mentorship program differ from all of the other ones that are out there on the market?
I think you're right, Chris. I had a bit of an early mover advantage when it came to podcasting and blogging and things like that. So there was a bit of a timing that has helped me get a bigger following than perhaps people starting today. So that's definitely true. But I think what it comes down to is the fact that I was and continue to push the boundaries, to question traditions and to innovate and think differently about approaches that are going on. And I think it comes back to my own experience in music, because after my original childhood lesson, so I studied with my teacher, Miss Mack, who's just a local person teaching from her home. I started at age 8, and by age 12, I did what's called grade 6 exam over here, which is kind of the one of the upper level exams. And then I wanted to go and do jazz. I didn't want to do classical anymore, and I kind of spat the dummy. And she found me a great jazz teacher who I still keep up with today, Steve Settergreen here in Melbourne, very well-known jazz pianist. And I studied with him for a few years. And then I kind of, when I was about 18, I did a music degree, but I was losing passion for music for whatever reason. I think the world was opening up to me. And what I was really getting into was outdoor education. So over here, there's a massive movement in every school, or most schools, to take kids away on camps and, you know, throw them down ropes off cliffs and those kinds of things. And I loved that. That was something that I just always enjoyed. And so I got into this much more and more. And it eventually took me overseas and then to Perth in Western Australia, where I did a lot of this as a teacher. I also taught some IT along the way. I've taught mathematics, PE, a whole lot of different things, but not so much music. But music was always a little undercurrent through my life. So I always had friends I might go every, you know, month or two and jam with, and a singer, and we'd just have some drinks and I'd play the piano and we'd have a laugh and sing. And I think the fact that I haven't had a traditional trajectory through music education, from childhood lessons to conservatory studies to teaching or performing, has meant that I come at what I do from a completely different perspective. And that's a perspective of, well, I've taught so many different subjects, all different sizes of classrooms. I've taken hundreds of children away on camps. I've done one-on-one teaching as well. I've done rock band teaching. I've done all sorts of different things. And so I can kind of bring those experiences to what I do at the piano and helping teachers. So that's why when I kind of came back to piano teaching from a full-time perspective around about 2010-ish, I really got serious about it. I just looked at what was going on and went, this just doesn't make sense to me. Why are we still teaching in these ways that we used to do so many years ago that you can see kids don't connect with? And that's when I started creating these kind of resources. And really all I was doing at the start was just writing my ideas down on a blog and recording videos on YouTube. I thought, well, what the hell? Why not get my stuff out there? No plans for the future, really. And then lo and behold, other people started typing into Google, you know, how do I teach a pop song, or help my student wants to learn the blues, what do I do? Those kinds of things. And then they found me. And so the audience has grown and I've been able to share more resources on that subject.
Wow, great. So it sounds like you just kind of found a niche when it wasn't even a niche yet. So
I think I tell people who are interested in online business, rather than think about finding a niche or a niche, it's a little bit about creating one that's kind of similar to some other ones. And I made a very conscious decision to not go down the route of YouTube videos for students, or, you know, creating things for students specifically, because there are so many out there. So looking at ways I could just look at teachers and supporting them, there weren't many people doing it at the time when I launched what I was doing. So that made a lot of sense to me.
Right, because, you know, the whole YouTube tutorial thing is a little bit of a big bit of a debate in the teacher world right now. So you might have gotten some pushback from that.
Yeah, that's true. And so, and that's where people, I'm sure I grate with lots of people, because I say YouTube is fantastic. And I love it when my students come in having learned something off YouTube, even if it's not that good. Because you know what? They're engaged, they're self-motivated, they're having fun, they're getting support from all their friends who are hearing them play this cool thing, and that's giving them positive energy to play more. It's a really great loop to be in. That said, it's only a part of a lesson, and I still want to provide a good all-round education to students. But you know, that's just one simple example, Chris, of where a traditional teacher might just go, no, I don't want to know anything you're doing on YouTube. In fact, I don't want you to use YouTube. That's just going to be bad for your technique, and stop doing it. Whereas today, that's not going to work, I'm afraid, for most students.
Right. No, I agree with you. It's a nice start having a YouTube tutorial. And as long as it gets them interested, there's so much more you can do with it after that. There's much more directions you can go. I've had a few students that started with me that started with YouTube tutorials.
Yeah, exactly. Or that maybe a YouTube tutorial has helped keep them hooked when they're about to lose interest. You know, that's another great use of YouTube. And it's been a massive motivator for one of my boys here. He's driving me insane playing the same thing over and over, but he's practicing and he loves it, and his friends love it too. And that's so self-motivating for his own development as an individual and as someone who will hopefully identify as a musician through his teenage years. That's so, so important.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, how much of our job is just keeping the student happy and compared to, you know, making them move forward.
That is a really good question. And I know some people probably look at what I do and go, you know, Tim's the guy that does happy, fun stuff with kids, and maybe there's not a lot of meaning to it. And I get that, because what we do can't all be fun. Practice is hard and it's miserable, and there will be screaming tantrums, and that's okay. And that's just the teacher. There's a place for everything. Everything in moderation.
Sorry, you're saying the teacher's giving the teacher the screaming tantrum, or the student is?
Yeah, no, I was insinuating the teacher was. Look, we all do at times. But I think the thing that I would be saying was that yes, a lot of the things that I teach and share ideas around are fun, but even more so, they provide a really deep musical experience for students that just reading music on the surface does not give you. So learning about the harmony and chordal structure of pieces is so much more satisfying and fulfilling for students if it helps them then be able to create some of their own music. I've gone way off track. I've got to stop talking.
That's fun. So, you know, then going maybe a little bit back on track, speaking of, so you were, you know, going along with the whole idea of you were maybe the first of a few to realize that podcasts were a big thing, or the first of a few to realize that you could do so much with pop music. And there's some new things too that are popping up. I'm wondering, you know, from an outside perspective, it seems like you pick up on trends really well. And so how do you do that? And what do you think some of the next big trends are going to be?
Well, good questions. I do believe in the power of reading and researching. I listen to a lot of podcasts in particular, and I listen to a lot that's outside of music. And in speaking to other people who are creating new concepts and new products and services, they often say the same thing. They read widely and listen widely outside of their own industry. And so I've focused a lot on online business and marketing podcasts and blogs. And that's probably because I was listening to so many podcasts, I think that's where the idea for the podcast came from, because I realized how much value I was getting from one or two or three. So I'm like, well, surely I could do the same thing. And so that's where that idea came from. But it's that idea of just keeping your eyes open to everything that's going on around you in your industry and outside too. And you know, I also should credit, there's a lot of people whose expertise that I call on to provide ideas about things like group teaching and pop music and stuff like that. It's not all me. And I'm very clear and happy to admit that I'm not the best teacher out there. I don't have all the answers. I'm not a specialist in everything. But what I am really good at and what I'm passionate about is bringing people together and sharing resources and bringing networks together. And that's what I really love doing. That's why I created my own membership. So, you know, about connecting people together, that's when the ideas really start flowing. And so I'm thankful to everyone who's contributed blogs to my writing to my blog or given an interview on the podcast, because it's those people whose ideas I'll listen to something and go, aha, maybe that could work over here in this beginner teaching thing that I'm doing over there. Let's try that out. So that's where a lot of that comes from. The other place things like pop music comes from is me asking people what they want help with. And that's where all my pop teaching resources came from originally. The first course I created was about teaching pop music, and that came directly from asking my audience at the time, people who are watching my free videos and reading my blog, what would you most like help with? So that's another great approach.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I mean, you know, kind of stemming off of that a little bit, I noticed a lot of on your podcasts, it's a little hard to phrase this, but basically it sounds like on a lot of your podcasts, when I've listened to them, your guests have given some really great tools for immediate use. And you, just like me, from what I just gathered from what you're saying, you take these tools and you turn them into bigger ideas. You think, what are the ideas behind these tools and what else can I do with these tools? And I'm sort of wondering, you know, what would you encourage your listeners to do the same thing? And how would you suggest doing that? Could you give a couple of examples for your listeners of how to turn your podcast tools into bigger ideas? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's a really good question. And I remember in some of our first email communications, you mentioned this. And your concern, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that the podcast almost is bad in that it gives away so many new ideas. Every week there's almost a new cool thing you can do. Your question to me was, well, what about the depth and what about the unpacking of those ideas? Or should we just, you know, try all lots of new things? So I think, am I right in thinking that's what you asked me? Or is it what you questioned? Yeah.
I wouldn't say, obviously, your podcast isn't bad, though.
No, bad was not the right word, obviously. But
I could give a sort of an example of like somebody who's talking about improvisation might say, here's this one scale that you might use. Play these few notes in this scale and, you know, play you can use a C five finger position and only use those notes in whatever order you want.
Yeah.
Where do you go from?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. Now, how do you go deeper with these ideas? So, I think it's a great question. And what another thing that has set me apart from a lot of other teachers or people who are creating products for teachers, and I've been told this by people, is that I don't dictate that you must do everything that I do. I don't say that you must lock yourself into my method. I don't, charge licensing fees for you to teach my songs or anything like that. And teachers many teachers have said to me, I really like that approach. I can keep doing what I'm doing, but add on new things, or I can slowly merge from this John Thompson method, which I've used for the last 100 years, to a more modern method, or, you know, that sort of thing. But I don't have to just suddenly drop everything, spend years learning a new way of teaching and start from scratch. And people have appreciated that. And so I make a point of anytime I introduce something new, particularly in my courses, I call them frameworks. They're really designed to not lock people into doing something one way. It's designed to be a spark of inspiration. And so, for example, my notebook beginners ideas for those first few lessons, it's all around, well, here's some improvisation you can do here. You can ask the student what they would like to play you, because I'm sure they could probably play you something. Here's an animal improvisation we can do. We can explore things, but I don't say you must do this step by step in this kind of way. So I think that's an important thing to take away. So all these ideas are designed to spark other ideas. Now, how do you make that happen? Well, it can be a little bit tricky. And that's why I know for a lot of teachers, step-by-step plans are actually really helpful. And so I do create those as well if you want to. But for others, you know, I was thinking of a podcast I did with Mike Verter. It was in my first year of podcasting, and he was creating 30 grand extra income on the side as a side income by running these online masterclasses for composing at the time. And so, I would take an idea like that and go, well, he's doing it for composing. So have I got any skills that I have that I could share in a similar online forum? How might that work? Could I start on YouTube with some freebies and see if it gets some traction? And then maybe I could start charging for it. How could that impact my own business? How could I make some extra money? Maybe it's not videos. Maybe Mike's plan is not going to work for me, but maybe I should be thinking of extra income. How could I do that? Maybe I should sell something. I don't know. But just to spark these ideas that people can then run with, I think is an important part of the podcast, the outcome for the podcast. And the same, we had quite a few people on talking about summer camps. And you know, that's a massive untapped industry in Australia and to some extent in the United Kingdom. Huge for you guys already. It's part of your culture. But to have people talking about that and unpacking how they're doing it, and some people are doing massive, huge multi-location camps. Others are just doing a few hours for their students. So I just love to inspire people to think of things that they could do that they wouldn't have otherwise thought of. My Music Staff is the easiest and most efficient way to run your music teaching business. This complete business-in-a-box solution has it all. I've even written a blog post on how I personally used My Music Staff to transition to automatic monthly payments. All my students now receive a monthly automatic invoice and their credit cards are charged instantly. It couldn't be easier. From a single teacher studio to multi-teacher schools, it has you covered. It will help you effortlessly manage your students, scheduling, billing, and more. It works on any device, so you're always well-informed and in control of your business, even on the go. My Music Staff will allow you to focus more on your clients instead of being consumed by overwhelming and time-consuming administrative tasks. My Music Staff can also be used as a tool to connect your students and parents outside of their weekly lesson. Not only does it allow students to notify you of any upcoming absences and even reschedule missed lessons, it's also a great way to keep your students engaged and learning outside of their time with you. You can leave lesson notes to guide their practice, assign new repertoire, and even upload content like video tutorials, audio, sheet music, and more. This immersive tool is a great addition to any studio looking to improve their business and set themselves apart from the competition. Use My Music Staff to add additional value to your lessons and help you stand out from the crowd. There's no better time to try it for yourself. Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial. It's the perfect tool to navigate your studio through the busy back-to-school season.
So I'm going to just kind of flip away from this whole topic of ideas real quick. And talk about you sort of more generally. This is something I notice about a lot of, you could say, superstars in our field. It's something that I think personally I've had to work on. I sort of see myself a little bit as an introvert who wants to be an extrovert. And so it's tough for, sometimes it can be tough for me to stand in front of a crowd and talk in front of them, or it's hard for me to lead a group conversation or something like that. I'll end up just sitting back and listening really carefully instead of putting my two cents in. From the outside, I know I've kind of only met you a few times, but just from on first impression, it seems like you just have such a bright, welcoming extrovert personality, and you know, you're always smiling. Like right now you're smiling, right? So
it's very, very kind words to hear, so I have to smile.
Well, and you're also well spoken, you know. I you're well spoken and you bring a room to life, and I'm just kind of wondering, how do you do that? How do you become an extrovert if you're an introvert? Is there anything wrong with being an introvert? You know, what's your thoughts?
Well, no, there isn't. Definitely isn't any issue with being an introvert. And I think you're giving yourself a hard time, by the way, Chris, because even just doing what you're doing now is not exactly introverted. So well done. Thank you, by the way. The really lovely comments. Very, very nice to hear. I really appreciate it. Tricky question, because I've kind of always been a little bit like this, but I will give you a secret that I don't think I've told anybody on the podcast anyway. And that is that I'm actually more of an, I can't remember exactly, I've got to find the exact words that because I've heard other people call themselves this, something like an extroverted hermit. And that's actually how I describe myself to people, because while I love being out there chatting to people, speaking, doing videos, all that kind of stuff, I actually really need my own time. And so particularly at conferences, once I've done my day of, as you say, you know, walking around smiling and talking to everyone, I go back to my hotel room and I have to be on my own and I have to have some chill out time as well. So it's not like I'm like this all the time. And I really value that time to myself as well. Maybe all extroverts are like that, but I have a feeling they're probably not. So I don't think extroverted hermit's quite the right word, but I've heard it called something like that. So maybe some of our listeners can enlighten me. But as for becoming more sort of confident being outspoken and that sort of thing, I'd just say what I always think when I'm going into a room of people that I don't know is that there are lots of other people who are feeling awkward and worried and a little bit afraid of this situation. And I keep that in mind when I go up and talk to someone. I just think, you're probably feeling exactly the same way as me. How about we just have a little bit of a chat and just, you know, have something to talk about that you can chat with other people about. I feel like I'm doing like a how to meet people at a bar or something. But it's the same when you go to a conference room, right? So, you know, try to avoid always sitting on your own. Sit next to someone that you've never met. You could even leave a blank seat. I normally do that. And then just have a little chat. Just say, you know what, you know, ask them something about their studio or whatever it is. So I think that's important. But otherwise, just as uncomfortable as it is, put yourself out there, write articles, record videos. I still look back on some of my early stuff and cringe. It's just awful to look at, but you've got to start somewhere. So the best thing I think to say to that would be, if you would like to be a little bit more out there or extroverted or create more things for people, you've just got to start and give it a shot.
Okay. Just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, that's right. Mikey had it right.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, I'll keep that in mind next time at a conference and I see some other, you could say, potentially introverts sitting alone in a corner. I'll go approach them. Yeah.
But yeah, in a nice, calm, non-threatening way. Yeah.
No, I know. I get it. Well, okay, great. So that's really helpful. So, you know, you do a lot. Going back to the first point that we made, and I'm wondering a little bit, how do you do all of that? And so, you know, you've got this, the inner circle going on, you've got the podcast going on, the blog and the traveling and all of that stuff. Right. And I imagine that it might be hard to do all of that alone.
Yeah. So, impossible.
Right. And so I'm guessing you have a team, right? Or some sort of help. And how did you find that help? And what is your help?
Yeah. Great question. And I don't want to put people off by saying, yes, I have a team of people helping me. While it's true, I remember when I was just starting and I heard other people talk about how they had people helping them, how I always felt like that was kind of unachievable. And it was just way out of my league. I'm struggling here every day recording these videos and writing these posts and editing them and finding the image and uploading to Facebook and doing it all myself. And that's just, it's kind of not fair. It doesn't seem sort of fair. So can I just start by saying I started doing everything myself, every single thing, including my website design and development, which I know I should never do now because I'm not a designer or a developer. But what I did, Chris, was just start to find things that either were quite repetitive and easily repeatable by someone else, or things that I just didn't want to do or didn't have time to do. And some of the first things were social media. So I found someone, and the way I did this was to go on a website like upwork.com, which is full of freelancers around the world who are looking to help people do things, often in other countries where good pay is a far less amount of money. And I found someone to help with social media and general research and things like that on my blog. I soon after connected with my now community manager and podcast producer, Nicola Canton, who started helping me with my show notes and things for my podcast. And what I found was that as the audience for things grew, and particularly as income started coming in, and that only happened when I launched my first course in 2014, that was the pop teaching course I mentioned before, I then had some income with which I could allocate to hiring other people to help me do things. And so, yeah, while you're starting out and there's not a lot of money coming in, it is very difficult to hire other people. But even when you have got people in your team, hiring another one or finding that extra person is always going to be a risk. It's going to be a jump. It's going to be a leap of faith, because when you need someone new, you never quite have enough money to do it, and you never have enough time to train them. But you kind of just have to do it, and it's a leap of faith. So what I'd say to people who are interested in how I've built this team is look at things that you're doing in your studios, or if you have a bit of an online side business, what are some of the things that you do that are quite repetitive and you probably could outsource to someone else? Someone else could do them. If they could sit at a computer and follow some instructions, they could do that for you. Or indeed, could some software help you do that? And that's why I love talking to teachers about my music staff or other software, studio software that allows you to automate monthly billing. So you don't have to do any invoices, cash any checks, worry about it at all. Things like that. That's the simple way to go. And if you want specifics about who's on my team, then I actually did a podcast episode number 116, which was all about who's on my team and how they work together.
Oh, cool. I'll check that out. I must miss it. Great. So good. It sounds, you must have still put a lot of work though in at the beginning of your career. So much to get to where you are.
And look, even today, it's not like I'm smoking a cigar on a hammock in the Bahamas. Well, no. building a business is, it's hard, hard work. But you know, when I look at the kind of impact that my work can have now that it's grown to its size, you know, it's all worth it 100%. But I still work really hard. It's amazing. You get more people on your team, but you then have more things to do as well.
It probably doesn't feel like work to you though. It seems very motivating.
Oh, it depends, Chris. Yeah. Some things are pretty, it's not all fun and games. Some things I just have to go and do. But there is a lot, and I particularly enjoy thinking up a little bit, like we were talking about earlier, thinking about the next thing I could help teachers with, or how I could expand or diversify what I'm doing to other areas to help people. That's what I love the most.
Is your brain always going? Is it always on?
Yeah.
Constantly asking questions and thinking.
Okay.
That's true. Thing, but I've also got 12 other things in mind of where this can go. Very cool.
That's why I love online planning software and notebooks. I have to get it out of my head. Yeah. But that said, I'm not one to skimp on sleeping as well. So I sleep really well, and I exercise a fair bit too, cardio and weights. And I think that's really important for a healthy lifestyle.
Oh yeah. I think I've actually listened to, you mentioned before that listening to things outside of the business
can
help. I actually just started listening to some entrepreneurship podcasts not too long ago that I think actually did say sleep and exercise are very important to, you could say, a healthy brain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I come back so energized when I've taken some exercise. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Let's do it. What's the next thing? When before I leave, I could just be about to fall asleep. So yeah, it's very energizing. And there's a big push against, there's a little bit of a startup culture around the world, not in music necessarily, that says that, all-nighters are really cool and you have to work yourself to death and all this kind of stuff to build a business. It's just not true. And people are really refuting this as sensible advice now. Get some sleep, sleep properly, get some exercise, look after yourself. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I'm still learning that the hard way. my fiance, Angela, she always yells at me. Staying up all night and then working on a project, because then I'll be completely gone the next day.
The next day, yeah, I know the feeling.
So, okay, cool. Well, the next thing I'd like to sort of ask about real quick is your own studio. I think you probably have mentioned here and there some things that happened in your studio in other podcasts, but I think I'd like to hear you talk about it a little bit more as a whole. And so, can you tell me what does your studio look like right now in terms of how many students do you teach and how do your lessons typically go, if typical even exists?
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. If you have any stories to tell.
Yeah. Good. good question. So look, my studio has reduced in size significantly, the more that my business of teaching teachers and growing that has grown. So I have about 4 students now, which sounds very small, and it is, but that's literally because it's so difficult to commit time properly, and I don't want to do a bad job when I do this sort of thing. So I've got about 4 students, 1 adult, 3 kids, who've been with me for quite a while and who know that I'm kind of wacky and crazy and you never know quite what's going to happen. And thankfully their parents are all very supportive of this approach and they're happy for me to record things with their children and for courses and that sort of thing. So that's my student level at the moment. And I think I do love teaching, so I don't want to ever lose that. And I think that number of students just works beautifully for me at the moment. A typical lesson, I do have a very simple outline for my lessons, and some people might have heard me talk about it. I call it my 3 keys to a music lesson. And really all I do is I think in terms of 3 key areas that I'm covering each lesson: technique, and that can be sight reading and oral and those kinds of things as well. Repertoire, and that's both classical and popular, contemporary, whatever it is, and creativity. And that involves, you know, helping them play their YouTube tutorial or learning a pop song or doing some improv, whatever it is. So if I'm covering those 3 things, that's a traditional lesson or a typical lesson for me. Now, it does depend, of course, on what the goals of the student are, whether I've got one student that does like taking exams here. So he has a slightly more structured approach. I have another teen who's much more flexible in his approach, but I do try to cover those 3 areas because they are, to me, the most important things to make sure I'm doing each lesson with a student. And look, you can see my teaching, anyone who's an Inner Circle member, I've got a lot of videos of me actually teaching students, so you can actually see that in action. If that's of interest and you're not a member, that could be something that you would like to get access to. Doing things like teaching pop songs, teaching kids to listen and play bass lines and play by ear, all those kinds of things, which I love sharing because I know how much I love seeing other teachers teach in their studio as well.
And I like that you organize your lessons into sort of 3 separate ideas. A lot of things in my life, I sort of live by the number 3. I think
3 is good. That's really good.
Yeah, 3 is a great number.
Yeah.
I think I heard something somewhere about, I don't know, Brahms or Liszt, always when composing, they think in threes as far as maybe phrasing is concerned or something. This is a side note, completely unrelated. Yeah,
right. No, but I think, you know, your brain can process 3s as well. That's why I think I can remember to do 3 things every lesson and I don't have to have it written down or anything like that. I tend to work each day on 3 priorities. What are my top 3 priorities I have to get done today? And I think 3 is just a good number for things like that.
Oh, great. So you also apply it to other things in your life.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Love it. So, all right. And then as far as your studio is concerned, another question. What equipment do you have and how do you organize all that equipment in your studio? There's so much to choose from out on the market. And I'm just wondering what you think might be the best tools.
Yeah, well, because I don't teach groups and I don't have a lab, because I have a smaller number of students, I don't have that much stuff that most teachers wouldn't already have. So I've got two. I do believe in having two pianos. In fact, behind me, I've got a hybrid and a digital, and that's fine for me. I don't really have room for an acoustic, and the digitals and hybrids to me are much more useful, and they don't cost as much money in the long term, etc. I could talk about that, but that we won't go into that. So two pianos. I think two pianos are really important because, particularly when I'm doing composing work, I can be on the second one filling in some nice string sounds or adding drum beats while they're on the piano. So that's cool to do. I do use my iPad a lot, and I've got various apps that I use and GarageBand and things like that. I've got a blog post all about the best apps for iPad teachers. We'll pop that in the show notes if it's of interest. Other than that, I have my own teaching resources. So yes, I do actually, if I'm taking on a new beginner, I'll get out my Notebook Beginners course and work through it, because another thing that I'm a big believer in is checklists and actually ticking things off. I always think back to pilots in a cockpit of an aircraft. Their whole life is checklisted. And I think if it's good enough for them, keeping us all safe, then it's good enough for me and my piano studio. So having some checklists of things that I'm going to do is important. My circle of fifths I use all the time. I do have a telescopic pointer too, which I like to use. So it's like an old car antenna that you can pull out. You seen these, Chris, before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is actually an old antenna off a car, I think. I've had it for like... since I was a kid. But you can buy these on Amazon, and it just allows you to not lean right over a student to point at something on their music. So simple thing. Other than that, while I do have a metronome behind me, I don't tend to use it. I tend to use drum beats more for the kind of work that I'm doing. And I'm just having a look around. Oh, and a sound system. So some kind of amplifier that I can plug the iPad into so that it doesn't sound like an iPad speaker if they're playing along to it. But really, that's it. Two pianos, a few little bits of tech, and a really creative mind.
Are you allowed to mention brands?
Yeah. So my digital is a Roland FP7F. It's a bit of an older model now, but they still make the FP series, which I think is a great one. And the hybrid behind me is a Casio. I can't remember the model, but Casio have only got a few hybrids at the moment. And my I do have an acoustic as well. It's a Kawai.
And what about the sound system?
You know what? That is a really old Logitech sound system for when people had desktop computers, and it was like a 5.1 surround sound system, but I've only got two speakers left with the subwoofer. Have you got one as well? Is that what you're reaching for?
Just checking, yeah. I was like, I don't know quite what my speakers I'm using. No, I don't have Logitech.
Right. I reckon I've had this for 20 years. It's brilliant. It just whatever you do, if you're going to be playing with backing tracks or things like that on an iPad and plugging it into an external system, just have a subwoofer. And if you're not sure what that is, it's just going to make things sound really meaty and bassy. So grab one.
When you're at the club, that's what's pounding, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And kids love it. Love it.
So, okay, great. So, all right. And then kind of more about your studio, sort of more about some of your business. It's sort of a, I guess you could say, it circles back a little bit. So a lot of teachers go to your inner circle when they need help with their teaching or with their business or any sort of thing like that. Where do you go when you need help? Do you ever need help?
Yeah, I do. I have questions all the time about what I'm doing. And look, I tend to rely on my family, and I've got great extended family through my brother-in-law and sister-in-law and those families too. People with lots of experience in business in particular and marketing and things. So that's very useful. The other thing I have, and I would encourage other people to make use of this, and this might be in the form of a music teachers association or a local meetup group, whatever it is. I'm a member of a very small mastermind, which is just a small group of people doing similar things to me. So we all have membership sites in the music industry, and we meet every 2 weeks online. And that is one of the best places for me to get support when I need it, or get told that I'm doing something stupid or get encouraged to do something that I'm worried about, whatever it is. There's four people. None of us pay anything for it. We're just there to help each other. And I could only encourage people to find that kind of a group themselves. Of course, that's why the Inner Circle is a great one of those for people around the world who are interested in helping grow their studio and teach a little bit differently. So that's a great thing for that. But if you're perhaps looking to create some businesses on the side or build some extra income streams and you can find other people doing similar but not competing things, then just meeting up with them can be great.
Well, cool. I think we probably got to start wrapping things up maybe. And sort of the last sort of fun question I have for you is, and maybe this might be a hard question for you to answer, but what were your three favorite podcasts that you've had over the, how many you've had so far? You said 160?
160, yep. Oh, a few more now, but yep. So how's that? Yeah.
So out of that gigantic number, what were your three favorite?
Easy. No, I will let our audience in on that you worded me up that this would be a question that was coming because, it is really difficult to pinpoint three out of 160 that I love. I've had so many wicked guests share amazing ideas and I've had so much fun with them. So I was thinking back and one of the styles of episode I love the most case studies with my members who have done something really cool with the resources they've found in the Inner Circle and have grown their business or have tried teaching beginners in a different way. So one of the ones that springs to mind is episode 147. That was called How Teaching Beginners with No Books Has Revolutionized Georgina's Studio. So she's one of my members, Georgina Jordan, excuse me, in the UK. And she took on the No Book Beginners Framework and just made it her own. Like she's doing, like she could almost do a version 2 and blow me away. Like it's unbelievable. So having stories like that were great. Also, episode 146, Behind the Studio with Amber Harnish, another member who, again, just doing fantastic things in her studio. I have to mention my episode with John Schmidt from the Piano Guys, episode 127. It was months of work to be able to get him on the podcast. I learned a lot in the process. I would love to have, if anyone's listening and can connect me with someone like Tim Minchin or Bruce Hornsby or Elton John or Billy Joel, any of those people, Chris, let me know if you've got any connections to those people because I would love to have them on the podcast. I know it's almost impossible, but I really did think John Schmidt was probably impossible and I managed to get there. So episode 127, that's another favorite. And I would also say episode 150, which was my roundup of global teaching experts, I called it. We had about 7 people on the podcast at once. That was the most I've ever done. That is a great episode to have a listen to.
I remember that episode in particular. It was so motivating. There were so many things going on, so many great ideas.
Yeah. And from so many different angles too. And you've got Lindell Kennedy, who's just so, her resources for improvisation are so rich and wonderful and heartwarming. And you've got Bradley, fantastic jazz and improvisation side, and Forrest and Paul. Anyway, it was great. And I'll just also direct people to episode 100 and 101, which were wrap-ups of some of my previous best episodes from the first 100. So if you're interested, check those out.
Well, cool. Well, that's all I got for you today. So
it's been awesome.
Thank you for coming on to my show for me to interview.
How did I go? Did I pass?
Yeah, I'll have to check in with the judges.
It's been super fun. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. And this was really fun for me too.
And so, well, people are probably wondering a little bit about you as well. So tell us, where can people find out more about what you are doing?
That's a big question. Well, I have a website. It's oilmusic.com. That's oil, OILLMUSIC.com. And that's a lot about where my studio, a lot more about my studio. And I have a blog on there now that's actually pretty new, but there's going to be some really, I think, big ideas on that blog. I'm excited to keep going with it. And I am also, you know, publishing through FJH now. So that's really cool. And I work for the Fabers. I don't know if I actually really have that information posted anywhere. but long story short, yeah. And I go to conferences. So come to conferences and, you know, maybe one of these times you'll hear me present.
Sounds good. And I remember your first blog post that came out. I remember reading it and it was really good. Really, really good. So keep it up. I know you're just starting out, but it was a great start.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Absolute pleasure. Well, thanks again, Chris, for being on the show and for interviewing me. That was really fun. I hope people have got value from it. And I'll look forward to seeing you at another conference.
Yes, you too.
Beautiful. See ya.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, that was a bit of an experience for me for the first time being interviewed on my own show. I hope you enjoyed that, something a little bit different. And we've got a few more unusual episodes coming up in this series, and I'll talk about next week's in just a second. But before that, I do love and value highly both your ears, but also your reviews. If you do have a chance to spend a couple of minutes to give me a review on iTunes or on Facebook, it would just be fantastic. And you can find out more about how to do either of those two things by going to timtopham.com/iTunes, and I'd really appreciate it. So next week on the podcast, another unusual show, we're going to be interviewing one of my students and his dad. And I'm going to tell you a bit more about them next week, but I know you're going to absolutely enjoy this show. And if you're a follower of me on Instagram and Facebook, and I highly recommend that you sign up, just look for Tim Topham Piano on either of those platforms, you will have actually seen a sneak peek of what Tim, my student, and I did at the end of this episode, which was do some jamming on Queen. He is such a fun kid, and it's really instructive to be able to interview and ask questions of both Tim and his dad about the lessons that he's having with me. And controversially, Tim actually has lessons from two teachers. I'm only one of two teachers, and I actually love it. And I know a lot of teachers hate the thought that their student might be taught by someone else as well as them, but I actually relish it, and I talk about why in next week's episode. Now, just before you go, if you enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle piano teaching community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts from around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams, whether that's about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home or hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more information on how to join us inside the Inner Circle today, head over to timtopham.com/community, and we'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.